19 minutes past 8 a.m. and it's time to move on and to look at the issue of hackers who have given the city of Johannesburg an ultimatum to pay a ransom, and this ultimatum is until Monday. And to understand what has happened and to tell us more, we're joined by cybersecurity expert Charles Yukerman. Charles, good morning to you and welcome to the show.
Good morning, thank you for having me.
Charles, this story about these hackers and giving the banks and the city of Johannesburg an ultimatum, what do we know about this? What is the background to this that has led to these demands?
Yeah, the only thing, I mean, it's international cyber criminals, which is not unique just to South Africa. It is all over the world where this is happening. And they are obviously after money. They are trying to get access into the bank's servers, what we call a denial of service attack. And if you want to, I can explain a bit about that to your listeners.
Yes.
But they are basically attacking the banks and attacking the city of Johannesburg in order to get some form of ransom, some sort of financial gain out of it. And but it's a global thing. I mean, South Africa, it's just very much in the news because it affects the direct public on a day-to-day basis, and hence why it's so much in the news. But it's something that continuously happens in organizations.
Yes, and I see they use the term DDoS, Distribution Denial of a Service. And I'm just trying to understand this term a bit more in terms of, you know, firstly, how do the hackers actually get in, and what does this DDoS actually mean for people, for the public?
Okay, so DDoS, let's explain it like you've got a normal household, and you've got a electric gates, or you've got a gate at your front door. Someone basically walks around with different kinds of remotes with different kinds of codes, and all they are trying is they're trying to open your gate. They would walk around with a key, and they will try all the different combinations of keys to get access to your house. That is in very simplest form what the denial of service attack is. So what the distributed denial of service attack is, and that's what the banks have experienced. So if I want to send you a mail, I would type in your email address, right? Or you've got your website. Now, the moment I type that name in, whether it's fnb.co.za or whatever the case may be, what it basically does, it says, here is the postal address to which you need to send this little piece of information. So when you go onto your keyboard and you type that in, you basically send into the internet. Say, guys, I want to make contact with that specific web server, whether it's City of Johannesburg or Apps or FNB or whatever. So what happens is, in the internet, there's a whole registry, there's a phone book to say, if this request comes through, send that request to the servers that sits at FNB or at Apps or wherever. So that is what it is. So what happens is, there are hundreds of thousands of computers all over the world which they mobilize. Now, mobilizing means there could be a piece of software on your computer right now which tries to connect into FNB without you actually even doing it. We call that a bot. Mm-hmm. It is a computer that just activates a piece of code, and all the code does, it tries to connect into FNB. Now, if there are millions of concurrent connections, concurrent computers trying to connect into FNB, their servers won't be able to handle that kind of load. It's almost like there is 1,000 people trying to enter your house. It just is not going to work. If you let one by one in and so on, it's one story, but you can only handle so many concurrent things at one stage. That is, in its simplest form, what the denial of service is. It is basically a crowd of computers trying to connect or to access your specific services. It doesn't actually access it. It just sends a request to say, cannot be the vaccine. But if there's hundreds of thousands of people standing outside your gate and say, we would like to access, you can imagine the magnitude of that kind of thing. That is what's happening, but at computer level, but obviously we can't see it. That is what the distributed denial of service is in its simplest form.
Right. Now, I think what is also important to understand is from a banking perspective and looking at strategies to prevent this type of thing, or we would rather call it defensive strategies, so that, you know, it does not impact on the banking industry or any other industry where possibly it could impact on people, it could impact on their personal information and breach as far as data is concerned.
Yes. Yeah, I think, are you asking me what are the typical things that we can do from the defensive point of view?
Exactly.
Well, there are lots of, obviously, IT security tools available in the market and so on. But what essentially is important is that we take a multi-layer approach. We take multiple ways in terms of how people access those specific servers. For instance, you don't have a very simple key to access your safe, right?
Mm.
You have maybe two keys, or you even have a combination lock and two keys. And that would be the exact same approach that you would do for people to access your core infrastructure, your core servers. So if someone tries to log in, you will not allow someone to log in from the outside. You would set up your IT in such a way that only if you are sitting inside of the organization. In other words, it picks up that you are inside the organization, plus there is something like a multi-factor authentication, plus you've identified yourself maybe with a security token. I mean, there's lots of things that you can do. So before you can access that server, or two people have to access it concurrently in order to gain access. So you almost have one person with one key and the other person with the other key, and both people have to be present in order to unlock the vault. Now, that vault is where the core information of the bank lies. It's nothing else than a glorified register, because that register just says who owes who and who's got how much money. Right. So you would take a proactive approach in the sense that if someone is coming knocking on the door, and it is unauthenticated, the person looks suspicious, you need to have those monitoring tools in order to give you those proactive warning signs to say, guys, it's almost like an alarm system or a CCTV, to say, guys, have a look at here. Someone is trying to access our building without authorization. And you then have to try and pinpoint those guys by putting the alarm bells up and putting the monitoring tools in place to detect those kind of things proactively is critical.
Yes.
It's no use that you look at the logs and say, well, this is what's happening now. You have to almost predict it from happening. And there's various ways how you can handle that. You need to have your intelligence in place in order to do that.
Yes. Now, Sean, in this particular instance, we are led to believe that these attacks started with a ransom note which was delivered via an email. It was sent through to unattended as well as staff email addresses. Now, how difficult or how easy is it to trace these emails, the source of these emails, and I think more importantly in terms of identifying who the perpetrators are?
Yeah, that's not as straightforward as it might seem to be. So it's an envelope that comes at your house. A computer also just sends an envelope with a bit of data in. And to try and identify where this envelope came from, you'll have to look at what kind of stamp is on top of the envelope, what kind of paper is it made of. So you literally have to do a bit of a Sherlock Holmes to try and trace and say, where's the origin of this? In computer terms, it's the same principle. We would think that, oh, that's very straightforward. It came from here and it was sent there. And it's not like that. People can disguise themselves in a sense that it looks like it's an envelope or a little request that came from, let's say, from Namibia. But actually, it didn't come from Namibia. They just used a server in Namibia to look as if it came from Namibia. But actually, it came from the UK. So if you then go back and say, oh, okay, it came from this specific server in the UK. Oh, no, actually, it wasn't from the UK. They actually just used that as a server to connect. So So you have to literally take one point at a time and trace the roots, try to trace the roots back. And remember, these cyber criminals are not dumb. They are not going to leave crumbles of information around for you to go and try and identify. They're going to take out the tracks as far as they can so that you cannot get back to the source. So you have to be very, very, very fast when these things happen so that you, in the quickest possible time, get as much as possible information to try and identify where it is. And now let's say you've identified it's someone that sits in Russia. How are you going to prosecute that person? If it's in South Africa, you can say, well, Mr. Police, you just can't arrest this guy because here's the evidence, etc., etc. But if it's someone sitting in another country, it becomes a very different dynamic in terms of the politics and the agreements and these kind of things to arrest that person. You have to go to Interpol or Europol or wherever and then log your case, and then they will put that in their list or bucket of cases to investigate. But it becomes a very sophisticated thing, and it's often these things are state-sponsored. You don't really know what's behind it. There might be some very big money behind it, which has been driven by some governments that have got malicious intent against other governments.
Well, exactly. And just finally, I see they are demanding this ransom in bitcoins. And I'm trying to wrap my mind as to why bitcoins.
Bitcoins don't have identity. So if I pay money into your bank account, it's very, very clear. I can go into the bank. I can find out exactly who you are, where you are. So it's almost you are a record from a cell phone point of view. You can see exactly what your address is and what your identity number is. Well, obviously, with Bitcoins, it's anonymous. You don't know who owns which Bitcoins. There's no identity, which means you cannot trace the identity, the true identity of the person. Is untraceable, and that's why they would use something like bitcoins. But people don't buy out bitcoins that easily. People shouldn't. If anyone is ransomed, just never, never pay out that ransom. Never do it, because you just fund that activities in the same way.
Well, Charles, thank you very much for that and for your time with us this morning. All the best to you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for another awesome day.
The Deeds.